Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from New York City. Welcome to the show, Bob Nackel.
Hi, Victor. How are you? Nice to be here with you today.
Great to have you here. Now, Bob, you've been in this commercial game for quite some time and doing a lot of very high volume, high price tag transactions. Before we dive into the details, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Sure. Well, I got into the real estate business completely by accident. I was a freshman at the Wharton School in 1981. Wanted to be the next Gordon Gekko, like every other Wharton kid. Looked for a summer job that would look good on my resume, and I came out of a Payne Weber office in Hackensack, New Jersey. Across the hall, I saw a Coldwell Banker. Went in thinking it was a bank, dropped my resume off, set up an interview for the following day. When I discovered it was a real estate company, almost didn't go on the interview. But they were the only ones hiring college kids for the summer. Took the job, loved it, went back my next two summers, and then started with CB in Manhattan when I got out of school. Met my business partner, Paul Massey, there. We were partners at CB for 4 years before we left. Started our own firm in November of 1988. Ran that business and grew it from just the two of us to 250 people in three offices in New York. In the 26 years and 46 days we ran that firm, we had sold more than three times the number of properties as the number two firm in New York. We sold the business to Cushman & Wakefield in 2014. I moved over to JLL with 53 of the folks that were with me at Massey Nackel in 2018. And I'm the head of New York Private Capital Group at JLL today, and still selling buildings. Last week, I closed transaction number 2,287. So been doing it for quite a while and still love it as much as I do the day I got into it. So very lucky that I stumbled into an industry that I love so much.
Very interesting. And boy, you threw out a couple of names that really threw me back. Payne Weber, my uncle actually was a senior executive in Payne Weber. He owned a seat on the New York Stock Exchange and then ended up at Payne Weber as a senior executive, which I think, if I remember correctly, ended up merging, became eventually part of Lehman Brothers, did it not?
I'm not sure. I know UBS bought Payne Weber. I'm not sure if they were ever part of Lehman.
That's right. You're correct. So yeah, fascinating. And I'm sure we know a number of people in common. Ryan Severino, who is a chief economist based in New York, has been a guest on the show as well in the past. So small world.
Fantastic.
So today, the landscape has certainly changed, and we could go many different directions here. Certainly, we could talk about New York. I mean, New York is going through extraordinary pain, I would say, especially in the office space, a very high vacancy rate. Some areas worse than others, like Harlem, the vacancy rate's, I think, pushing north of 40%. And there's still a lot of Class A new product coming into the market, products that were started before even the pandemic. And once you start, as you know, you can't stop. New supply coming in to with very weak demand. Why don't we start there? What's your perspective on the New York market?
Well, I think, this is now either the fourth or the fifth major downturn I've been through. And I say fourth or fifth because the correction really started in October of 2015, and we had a 12-month hiatus from the correction in the second half of 2021 and first half of 22. But now, because of the interest rate increases, we are now either in the second half of a correction that started in 15, or we're in a whole nother correction. But it's behaved very differently, Victor, than the S&L crisis in the early 90s, or the recession of the early 2000s, or the GFC in 08, 09, in that different product types are performing differently. You mentioned the office sector. That is probably the most challenged sector we have, although I will say that new construction Class A office is doing much better than the rest of the market. But I think that in terms of climbing out of what we're in now, the office sector probably will be the last sector to climb out. The retail sector is actually a bright spot in New York today, but that's because there's been downward pressure exerted on both rents and the volume of sales for many years finally has stopped going down. The multifamily sector has some political headwinds in that space, but demand is robust. The land market, also similar to the broader market, where different product sectors are performing differently. We essentially have a giant air bubble in the supply of rental housing because the tax abatement program that made it economically feasible has expired. Condo land is selling, but it's down probably 25 to 30% just in the past 14 or 15 months based on the high cost of construction lending today. There are different things going in different directions, but to say the market is challenged is probably an understatement.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I think about the buildings that are doing, that are really struggling in New York, I mean, the New York footprint is such that many buildings have a almost a square floor plate. You know, they measure 200 by 200. I mean, when you think about that floor plate, it's almost an acre of land. And those buildings are not candidates for conversion to residential. If it's 100 by 200, then maybe, but 200 by 200, not a chance. There's way too much area in the core. And those older buildings, many of them with outdated infrastructure, would need tens of millions of dollars to upgrade and be brought up to standard. And I see a lot of dark floors during the day and at night in some of those older Midtown buildings.
Yeah, well, Victor, I think what what we're going to see at the end of this cycle, and I agree with you that a lot of the floor plates are very, very dense and are not easily convertible. But based upon where the value of B and C office buildings is headed, I believe that at the end of the cycle, we'll probably see more demolitions than conversions because combination of the price of the building and the cost to demolish is getting to the point where it's dipping below land value. So I think we're going to see a lot of these older, functionally obsolete office buildings demolished as opposed to converted.
I agree with that. I think that that makes a lot of sense. Now, when I go through New York, I still see a lot of storefronts. I'm thinking Madison Avenue, places like that, that still don't have vibrant businesses in them yet. Although I think the West Side certainly has heated up again. Areas that, you know, when I was a kid spending time in New York City were, you know, Hell's Kitchen, areas like that, that were really not great areas, today are very hot. And some of the most expensive areas along Madison Avenue, Lexington Avenue, is still a lot of empty storefronts.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to when I started in the business in the 80s, there were areas of Manhattan south of 96th Street that were not such great areas and you didn't want to spend a lot of time in, particularly late at night. The market has become much more homogenous over the last 10, 20 years. There's not a bad neighborhood anywhere in Manhattan south of 96th Street. And I think what we're seeing is that the Brooklyn market today is very reminiscent of what the Manhattan market was back in the 80s and 90s, where you have some areas still struggling a little bit to get ahead, but a lot of areas just exploding and doing really great. I think in a lot of ways, the Queens market is like that as well. So there's been a big transformation with respect to how different neighborhoods have evolved, you know, over the past several decades.
One thing is clear, there's a lot of political headwinds that are making it difficult for investors to make the numbers work in the New York area. And I think, yes, New York's still a financial capital. It's still a desirable place to live, very desirable place to visit, and still a lot of money's leaving the city as well. What do you see the future for the next 2, 3, 5 years?
Yeah, well, I've lived in New York for 39 years, lived in Manhattan. I am a big proponent and a big champion of the city. I love New York. It pains me to see our policymakers doing things to drive folks away from the city, to drive investment capital away from the city. We've seen it very profoundly in the multifamily sector where for decades, we had clients who would only buy in New York City apartment buildings. They wouldn't even go to New Jersey. And today, probably 85 to 90% of them are buying all around the country, won't touch a building in New York because the policies are so draconian. And that's a terrible thing. You know, I read an article last week about how many billionaires have moved out of New York over the past few years. That's eroding our tax base. And although, you know, our population may be growing, a lot of the folks coming in are young kids who want to come here and cut their teeth and make their life. But, you know, if you have one family of four move out and that family's a billionaire and you have 100 new kids move in, you know, your population may have increased by 96 people net, but your tax base may have been eroded by $18 or $20 million. So it is an issue. I don't think our policymakers grasp what it is that they're doing to both the reality and the perception of the city. I think that because of that, it leads me to believe that the biggest problem the city has is voter apathy. Less than 15% of our registered voters actually vote. And with as important as real estate is to New York City, and the real estate industry directly and indirectly contributes about 54% to the city's budget in the form of real estate taxes, mortgage recording taxes, transfer taxes, and other fees and charges that are produced by real estate, you would think that our policymakers would embrace the industry, but they have chosen not to do that.
Fascinating. Well, Bob, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
The best way to get in touch with me is feel free to email me at bob.nackal@jll.com. Nackal is K-N-A-K-A-L. So bob.nackal@jll.com. And I'm also very active on social media. You can find me on Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook. So feel free to DM me on any of those platforms. And always happy to talk to folks about real estate.
I love it. Well, Bob, love what you're doing. And next time I'm in Manhattan, let's grab a coffee.
I would love that, Victor. Please give me a call.
Fantastic. Well, for the listeners at home, definitely reach out to Bob Nackal at jll.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.